worthwhile, Jaron. I'm an addict. I want to welcome y'all to NA16 down here in Ocean City, Maryland. I'm just going to ask for a raise of hands. People that are clean, a month and under, like to raise their hand. Just my personal opinion, and I want to say I do not speak for the program of Narcotics Anonymous. My personal opinion is that we are here for the newcomer. Without the newcomer, we cannot survive. It is a program based on helping other addicts to achieve a space where they can learn, where they can live, where they can make a choice today whether or not, you know, they want to go through with their life or whether or not they want to end it. I feel for the newcomers sometimes because they come in here and all the things that they were running from before, you know, start to hit them, and the buffers that they used to have before, they're no longer there, and we're having the mood swings going up and down and up and down and up and down, and we're just feeling like we're going to crawl out of our skin, man. And then, you know, we hear about all these, you know, behaviors that we shouldn't participate in. You know, they'll lead us back, and sometimes we give up, man. Sometimes it's too much, and the disease of addiction grabs them so hard. They don't know what the miracle is like. They haven't had the time to feel the miracle unfold in their life, and that's what I mean. I mean unfold in their life because it's a process. It was a process that got you here where you are right now. It was a process that brought you into the program of Narcotics Anonymous. It was your best thinking, your best judgment, all the information that you had in your hip pocket you were using, and it, what did it do to your life, you know? We got to remember that. It was our best thinking that got us here, you know? All the trouble that we got in, all the people that we placed misery on their life one day at a time, while they watched us die one day at a time, that was our best thinking. That was the best that we could do at that given time. So it's kind of hard sometimes to accept that it's going to take a while to learn new information, to learn a new way of life, to practice a new way of life. All that learned behavior that we learned out there, we practiced time and time and time and time and time again, so that way we could get what we wanted without getting burned, you know? So that way we could do whatever we wanted without many consequences. And then we come in here, and it's almost the same thing, you know, except we realize that we're the ones that are burning ourselves one day at a time. And it isn't just the act of addiction. It's all the behaviors that surround it, that are saturated with it. And that's why we have 12 steps. If we were just told to come on in here, you know, sit down, shut up, learn a new way of life, but not give you a guideline in which to do it, and not give us 12 traditions in which to keep the group alive, we'd be coming up short each and every time. And to not, and this is just me, to not practice the 12 steps in a 12-step program is an act of lunacy. It's like we're waiting for a wand or a relationship. I'm not sure, but you know, we're waiting for a wand to, you know, smack us on the head and say, "You're cured." You know, it's all good. It's all good, and it's not. You know, if I'm not working the 12 steps in my life, if I'm not surrendering myself to my higher power's will, my disease is going unchecked. That's me. That's my thought. And my clean date is April the 13th, 1985. And tomorrow's my anniversary. What do you know? Check that shit out. And let me tell you, every time I've come to this convention, it's been a week before my anniversary. So, you know, I remember it was a week before my 1 year, and they're like, 1 year, and I couldn't raise my hand. You know, that whole honesty thing, it was really irking me. So then this, you know, this Saturday night, I'm the one that's going to be jumping like this. So I just want to let you know. I was going to bring fireworks, but they said don't do that. So I'm gonna let that one go. But working the 12 steps in our lives, it's a process just like when you're watching the other people around you cop. When you're watching the other people commit the crimes, do the things that they needed to do to feed their addiction, to feed their disease, to feed their way of life, and then you started mimicking that, you know? And when you got locked up, you try to find out the things that they did that they got caught so that way you wouldn't do it. I tell you, my career, I started early. My father was he was a real bad drunk, and my brother got burned so badly from a house fire. He died 6 weeks later from pneumonia. My father lost his mind. My mom had a nervous breakdown, and he ended up breaking her back, and she escaped. And she was able to get my brother and my sister out and left me there. And I didn't know until after I was working the steps that I felt like a piece of meat thrown to the dogs so that way people could get away. And that's exactly what happened, you know. And so I was stuck with psychotic, you know, and I remember cleaning my blood up off the floor, and I remember it didn't matter what I did, it made no difference, Did you brush your teeth? It'd be 5 o'clock in the afternoon. No. And that's how I grew up, and I didn't know any different. But I did know that that your lives were different. Your lives were different. And you didn't have to live with fear each and every day. And progressively, I started to hate you. Progressively, I wanted to get even each and every day. And coupled with a learning disability, a few learning disabilities, my scholastic career was pretty poor. And so I started taking my anger out, you know, running up to you at playground, kicking you in the back, kneeing you in the back, taking off my belt and whipping you. I mean, I was just, I was permanently expelled from regular school in the sixth grade forever. And they kept me in special classrooms from the fifth and the sixth grade, half of the fourth and the fifth and the sixth grade. And I remember the first time I got high. I remember even before I got high, I was acting like I was getting high, just so that way I could feel like I belonged. Just, I was willing to do anything to find a zipper to get out of a person I could not stand. And I tell you, man, once I started getting high, that was it. That was completely it. And it didn't matter what I was using. I was using greens pretty fast in that game, and I just turned 12, and I was a garbage head. Anything I could possibly get my hands on, I'd get on. And I remember I was 12, and I landed in my first psychiatric institution. I was already on probation. By the time I was 13, I was on indefinite probation because I just could not stop. And I remember I was in the psychiatric institution for 2 weeks, and I was so drugged up at 12 years old that I remember 2 weeks later, I'm walking up, and I'm like, I saw this little paper. It said, Springwood Psychiatric Hospital, right? And two people were sitting right down. Let's pretend that you're the people, okay? And I said, is this a psychiatric institution? And they're looking at themselves, because I've been here 2 weeks. You know what I'm talking about? And they're like, yeah, this is... I said, I don't belong in a psychiatric institution. I don't belong in a psychiatric institution. Like, I need to convince them after 2 weeks. That was me at 12 years old. That's how drugged up I was at 12 years old. And I remember they sent me to another place after that. They diagnosed me psychopathic disorder, adolescent turmoil, addict, and a couple others. I can tell you how I got that information later. But anyways, I remember I went to another place after that for long term. And I remember I was so psychotic, they kept me unavailable to feel direct sunshine on my face, to smell fresh air. And then even when I was able to get to a place where I could see the sunshine, it was still bars and then the plexiglass. And then I remember one of the first times I was able to go out, and I try to go through the woods, stuff like that. And I remember I saw a bottle there, and it had a liquid in it, and I smelled of alcohol. It had dirt in it. Didn't matter. I drank what was there. I knew that there was alcohol, most likely, in the dirt, so I took some dirt in that too. And I was 12 years old. I remember thinking, you know, God, if you get me out of this one, because there was an Alateen convention coming up. Alateen is like children of alcoholics, children of, you know. And luckily, and I thank God I was a part of that, because it introduced me to a world that wasn't as hostile, where people gave you hugs, where people wanted to listen to you, where people were there for you. And I honestly believe that if it was not for that influence, I would never be here right now. I would have never reached the point to where I said I need help, and I would have trusted you to actually help me. So I've got to throw that out. And from there, it just got worse. I'd go home for a little while, and I would just do what I did. It was a way of life at this point. It wasn't so much, you know, what am I doing? It's just, this was a way of life. And getting in fights with my brother, he was a lot bigger. By that time, I was living with my mom, because my father had lost everything. His eyesight in one eye. He lost his house. He ended up in a van. I don't even know if it ran. Two shirts, a pair of pants, and a mom. That just, she just wasn't there. And I hated her. I hated her. And all that anger coming out. And my brother didn't like the way I was disrespecting my mom, so we'd get into fights, and finally I just stabbed him through the chest. I just was like, you will not touch me anymore. And that's when it just started going downhill. And I was given a juvenile life by the time I was 14, and they granted it, I guess, by the time I was 15. And I remember I just stopped counting how many times I'd went to court. I mean, I was on a probation, and he never violated me. And I remember asking him, I said, how come you've never violated me? He said, Jerry, he said, I don't believe it, that you're a criminal. I honestly believe that you do not possess the ability to control yourself. And I remember thinking, you know, like laughing, like, you know, right. But looking back, I did not possess the ability to control myself. Every time I would take my anger out in whatever way I could to hurt you the most, there was a part of me that was suffering inside, but it was so buried underneath that rage. And that alcohol and drugs, it used to work at first, all of it. That used to work at first, it wasn't working anymore. It wasn't working at all anymore. And more of the behaviors were coming out, the addiction, whatever I could use, whatever I could do, it just wasn't working. And finally I was at this camp, and I was there over a year and a half, and I was on weekend trips, and I had a habit of stealing cars and flipping them, and I would do it without a seatbelt on because I like to see where I ended up in the car after it was finished. And I figured it was punk rock, you know, romantic or something. And anyways, you get caught. Anyways, I got caught, and I remember my bottom was so crappy. It was just so shitty. And the people I was dealing with, and they did not have my best health in mind. They were discussing whether, I'm not even going to go there. But anyways, it was just a bad time. And it was April the 13th, 1985, and my mother was celebrating 5 years of recovery. 5 years. And yeah, I did see a change. And my father, he had been sober a couple years more than that. And I saw the change in him too, you know. But the addict, a lot of times, lives in a previous day, you know. When we don't let go of stuff, we're seeing things through a lens that just focuses backwards, you know. And that was me. I was not seeing the truth. I was not seeing today. I was seeing yesterday. I was seeing what you did to me yesterday. And I would have never let it go. It's an endless cycle that just deteriorates the soul and makes everybody suffer, whether you've changed or not, whether you've made an amends or not. And I want to keep you down because you put me there a long, long time ago. And I remember thinking about picking up that one-day chip because they were doing the chips, you know. It was a big meeting downtown. And I was thinking, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pick up that one-day chip. People are going to be clapping. I'm going to find a little honey. I'm going to be like, I got a day, girl. You know what I'm talking about? And, you know, come here. You know, and that's what I was thinking. That's what I was honestly thinking. I was thinking, okay, what if I do? I thought it through, you know. What if I pick up that one-day chip? Then what? I might stay clean a week, 2 weeks, a month. They had a confinement area there and at the camp that I was still at. And I was like, even if I was stuck in there and you have no contact with anyone, 6 months tops. And even then, I honestly did not believe I would make it 6 months in a hole not using, you know. And that's when I hit my bottom, right there. And thank God for our traditions, because the traditions say that our only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. Not you have to be stopped, you know, 1 year ago, 2 years ago, not your religion, not anything. A desire. And there was, in the back of my mind, there was always a desire. I just was powerless. I was powerless over my addiction, and by far my life had become unmanageable. But you still got to try. You can't just give up. You know, you got to wait till you got lots of scars, lots of injuries, you know, internal scars that will take you years to heal from, you know. And you know what? I went up and I picked up that one-day chip, and I didn't like God. Unfortunately, I did have a belief in a power greater than myself. And I looked at it as an entity, but I looked at my life at that point. I looked at it as a sick joke, and I didn't trust you individually. I didn't like you. I really didn't like you because you had what I never had. You had the opportunity to be outside. You had the opportunity to have nice clothes. I didn't even see a button collar shirt until I was like 16. All of this, I figured you had it. You had girlfriends. You went to a regular school. I really disliked the people and Narcotics Anonymous, and but you were the only people I could even remotely identify with. You were the only people where I didn't feel like I was totally on the outside looking in. There was a barrier there, and I felt like it separated me, but part of that was me, and I knew it. Even then, I wasn't so full in denial that I knew that I was part of that barrier right there. The other was, who knows, maybe my imagination. But I went up and I picked up that one-day chip, and I wasn't raising my arms. I wasn't joyous. I was beaten. In the space of 2 minutes, I was beaten. Whereas institutional facilities, programs, venture expeditions, sending me out in the woods for 6 months or some, go bushwhacking, you know, another one for 22. All of this, I was beaten in 2 minutes. I went up and I picked up that chip and I gave that person a hug. And I remember they were driving me back to Leesburg. And I asked my mom if she could get me into a program, and she said, why? And I said, because I'm going to die, and I'm going to die. And I don't think I was too scared of the whole dying thing. It was because I'd been begging for it my life, you know. And I couldn't do it anymore. I just could not do it anymore. And by the grace of God, I was able to go to a rehabilitation center. And even after just a week, I remember my last day there at camp in Leesburg, my peel pulled strings. I was turning 18 in less than a month, and miracles happened. And I went to this place. It was in Williamsburg, Pennsylvania. Cove Forge. There were no leaves on the trees. There was no flowers. There was no nothing. And I remember I walked in there with my, I had a pink warm fuzzy. You know what a warm fuzzy is? That little cotton fur ball stuff. That was my chip. That was my proverbial chip. And it was a pink warm fuzzy that my girlfriend Kathy had given to me. And I walked into camp with that same warm fuzzy. And it's just a chip on your shoulder. And you're looking for negative attention. And I remember I walked into the rehab, and I remember they were giving me hugs, and they were saying how cool it was. And no one gave me any negative attention. And I remember knowing at that point that this is where I belonged. This is where I belonged. And I remember the more I stayed clean, the more my humanity started to come back, the more scared I was getting, you know. And I remember I asked my counselor, I said, have I hit bottom yet? You heard all this stuff about you got to hit bottom before you get clean. You got to hit bottom before you get clean. And I looked at him, and I told him all the stuff that I'd been through, and he read my records, too. And I said, if I hit bottom, and he said, Jerry, you know, he was a member of another fellowship. He said, if I would have came to that fellowship 40 years ago, wearing, you know, the watch that I'm wearing, being as young as I am, being married, having a good job, stuff like that, they would have told me to go back out for another 5-10 years. He said, but I don't believe that today. He said, I believe that if you're willing to become teachable, you've hit bottom. And I raised my hands and said, I'm teachable. I'm teachable. And I remember being in places where they would tell me to sweep your boys' homes. You know, they'd tell me to sweep the gravel road just to make just any consequence, just to keep me doing something and make me change my way of thinking. And didn't matter. I was willing to do anything, scrub a toilet, eat it. You know, it's not like I hadn't done it before. Whatever. You know, I remember I went up to my counselor and I said, man, I'm blah 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 blah. He said, you see that kid over there? I was like, yeah. And he said, go over there and help. I was like, no, you don't understand. I was like, I'm fucked up. I'm the one that's messed up. And he's like, no, Jerry, you go over there and you help. And I was like, you don't. He said, go over there and you help that. And I'm walking up, and a little blonde hair, let's see if there's no blonde hair kid in there. A little blonde hair kid, you know, he's going all like that. He's, you know, there's Dockers and button collar shirt and all this. And I'm thinking, whatever. He's got no fucking problems. And I remember I walked up to him. I was mistaken materialism for spiritualism, I guess. And I remember I walked up, his hands like this, and I looked down, and I reached out my hand, and I said, my name is Jerry. I had no idea what to say to this cat after that. And I remember he looked up, and he reached out his hand, and he shook my hand, and as melodramatic as it sounds, I don't remember the conversation that ensued. I just remember that it was such a jarring experience. It was like those bars of self-centeredness that kept me locked up inside of myself, willing to do anything to you to just get out of myself for a minute, willing to pay a price that would stick me in some place for a long time just to get me out of my head for a minute. Those bars of self-centeredness loosened up, and it was incredible. It was incredible. And I remember he told me, he was like, Jerry, I don't want you to become a captain. I don't want you to become this. I don't want you to become that, you know, this rehab. He said, I want you, whenever you help somebody, I want you to do it in a means where no one else will see. You know, where you won't be getting credit for it. You know, people won't be praising your name, shit like that. And at first it was hard. But the more I did it, the more I realized that I had a soul inside of me. You know, that I wanted to be there. I wanted to take my place in humanity today. I wanted to feel something other than pain and rage, anger, resentment, frustration, jealousy, envy, all of those things. I wanted another way of life. And I started to recognize day after day after day that it was by far a process. And it was going to take me a long time in order for me. I put myself in such a hole. You cannot do cruddy things your whole life and not feel cruddy. Fact. You know? It was going to take me a while of trying to let go of that, of being there, of taking my place in humanity and walking with them for me to feel like one of them. And 5 minutes. I got a sponsor, and I remember reaching out to him was hard. You know, I remember becoming vulnerable to another person, letting that person know me without a front. You know, it was unnerving at first. It was unnerving. It's been 16 years, 364 days, and I'm still growing, and I'm working on another fourth step right now, and seeing more inside of me, accepting a lot of my past that even in recovery, I didn't want to look at. You know, I was still using behaviors in recovery that would separate me from my emotions, that would separate me from a lot of the stuff that was still going on inside of me. And as a result, man, I hit a bottom with that too. And I remember I was walking down the Sino Canal, and I was blaming three people for the predicament that I was in, looking at them, you know. And then I wrote this because I realized that it was me. It was me that was responsible for where I was at this point in my life right now. I put myself here. I chose these people. This is the way of life that I've been walking. Therefore, it is my responsibility. And I wrote this, and it reads, "The results of my life that continue to unfold before me stand as a living monument to the decisions that I have either chosen to make and act upon or run away from in fear of what may or may not happen." And at that point, I really started taking responsibility. And that was, I guess, September sometime. And a lot has happened, you know, working with another sponsor, really digging into this fourth that's just serious. Sponsoring people, coming up here with someone I'm sponsoring, and a bunch of other cats, and just living life. You know, being of support to them, you know, taking responsibility for my contribution to their recovery. What they choose to do with it, that's their responsibility. It's up to them. No matter what I say up here, and my primary focus while I'm up here is to plant a seed, maybe, you know, to maybe give someone that might be struggling with one thing an opportunity to look at another way of life for a brief moment and decide whether or not they want to take the first steps to start going in that way, or if someone's already going that way, to reaffirm that they're making the right decision here, you know? Definitely for the newcomer to plant an egg, to let you know, don't give up. Real easy to give up. I was talking to a lady here, right here, our next speaker, actually. She's from a place outside of Philly. I just buried someone in Philly, three Fridays ago. He OD'd, you know? 2 months before that, people from Montgomery County, on the area, Chester. I was with him on a Friday night, and we were stepping this one guy who was straight up homeless. He was struggling. We had to call an ambulance. He'd get hypothermia. And we're helping this one dude, and I'm giving him food, wrapping him up, and then finally we called the ambulance. He's doing all this stuff. We were at a midnight meeting, then he's doing all this. That was a Friday. We were sitting next to each other, and then we do the 12th step. And then by Monday, he was dead. Went back out, OD'd, cardiac arrest. He was gone. And I just remember, it's almost like this disease is almost like a whole other entity, you know, where if you give it a little bit of leeway, it will creep in, and it'll just take your life. It'll take it. And if it can do it real slow, real subtle, real progressive, and real insidiously, it will do it. But if need be, it will take you out before you can change your fucking mind. And you were 6 feet under, your mother sitting there, looking at their mothers, looking at this guy's mother and the kids behind. That's addiction. That's the nature of addiction. But the nature of recovery today is that I have the opportunity to come up here and for today to earn my humanity, to be there for you. And what you choose to do with it, that's up to you. But thanks for letting me share.
Now I would like to introduce our second speaker, Kathy F.
Thank you. It's funny. It's almost like, you know, when I got asked to speak about this topic, it was like, God offered me all these opportunities to learn about how to be responsible. You know, because I just, you know, I'll be real honest with you. I had been in NA a very long time and then took a vacation. I don't mean like I went out and used or any of that other stuff, but it was like this disease is real insidious. And even in recovery, you can have the very best intentions. My son was born, I started going to meetings, and all of a sudden, and like people mean the best intentions when they open their mouth. But I was in a meeting one night and I was crying because I had postpartum depression. And, you know, to understand this, and being my mom had a stroke, then I had my son. Then my father died right after that. And I was in a meeting crying one night because I was just so sad of all the loss I had. And this person turned around and they said, "You got all this time, you need to snap out of it and suck it up." Well, I turned around and I said, and I won't even repeat what I said because it's just, it was so horrible. I just turned around and said, "You know what? I don't need this. I don't need you judgmental people. I'm out of here." And I walked out. And, you know, like, I was still coming to meetings, but I didn't have a home group, and I sort of had a sponsor, but I wasn't, like, sort of calling them. But after a while, I missed it too much. I missed my family, and this is what I think of NA as my family. And, you know, I started going back to meetings. I found a home group I liked. It wasn't necessarily a home group that was around the corner from my house, which my last one was. But it was a home group I could make, and that's part of my responsibility to my recovery, because, you know, we can talk, you know, it's nice to be responsible, a productive member of society, but if we're not responsible for ourselves, we can't be responsible for anything else. That's just how it works. So anyway, back to my story. The reason I said all that was, after I was asked to speak about this topic, like, things were coming up. Like, I was, you know, I had to switch sponsors because the sponsor I had, like, she was real nice and all, but something happened that was, like, really tragic, you know, like I was talking about burying people. Well, March 10th at 8 a.m. in the morning, my husband woke up with very bad chest pains and had all the symptoms of a heart attack. I'm the one who was like, "Miss Needy, oh, I need this and all." I'm the one throwing clothes at him. Get your damn clothes on, throwing them at him, calling the rescue squad, get my son ready, doing everything that I needed to do as a responsible person, because that's what you taught me in here, through steps, through a home group. And you're probably like asking, "Well, how the heck does that work?" Well, because when you start working steps, and you get out of the chains and the bonds and the prison, the self-centeredness, like Jerry was talking about, you can kind of look at other people other than yourself. And that's kind of what I did. I ran to the hospital. It was weird because I was supposed to speak on my home group's anniversary on the importance of a home group. I grabbed my Just for Today meditation book, my home group phone list, my cellular phone, my bag, my keys. After my son went to next door neighbors, who's also a recovering addict, I'm like, you know, he took me out of the house. I didn't even say anything. That's how this works. If you allow people, if you're responsible enough, and you get out of yourself enough to accept help, you can let this work. You know, this can work if you allow it. So anyway, I'm running, you know, in the car behind the ambulance, calling the chair of the home group saying, "Look, pal, you know, I'm sorry. My husband, I think, is having a heart attack. I won't be there today. Goodbye." The old me would have been like, "Well, the heck with them. I'm going to do what I want. And, you know, they can just get somebody else." But part of being responsible is showing up. And if you can't show up, you call or you find some way to let somebody know what's going on. That's just how it is. I mean, when I got there, I started making phone calls to family. And it was almost like when I first came into recovery, somebody told me, "Well, our disease is always like our addiction. And the way we acted is always our primary, like, we act that way first all the time, and then our recovery kicks in." Well, that day it didn't. It was almost like my recovery went on autopilot, and I acted the exact way that normal, or as I call, earthlings act. I did all the responsible stuff. I was in there with my husband. I was signing all these papers and doing everything I was supposed to do. I'm not saying that to get a pat on the back or anything like that. It was just one of those things you had to do. What was really nice was I had addicts there the whole time. It was a friend, my sponsor, and her husband were there, and they sat with me the whole time. But I talked to my sponsor last night. She's like, "Well, yeah, but you also need to talk about how there are times you are not very responsible in your recovery." I'm like, "Fine." Because it is a program of honesty. And I think for the most part, you know, we're responsible, you know, to what we did in our past. And that's through steps. And we do that in here. You know, because I was amazed when I got here how, like, there were so many responsible people doing, you know, like, I got hugged when I got in here the first time when I registered, and then I got hugged, and I see a person hug me here saying, you know, take this hug with you wherever you go, and I'm like, well, yeah, that was really nice, because there's nobody that even knows me here, because I'm all the way from, like, Levittown, Pennsylvania. Everybody's like, where the heck is that? It's outside of Philadelphia, and it's 20 minutes from Trent, New Jersey, but that's okay today. And that's kind of how I looked at it, because, you know, I know you even if I don't know you personally, because we all journeyed down the same road. We didn't take all the same, we might have taken different roads to get here, but we're all here. But, you know, responsibility to me today is being, you know, a good employee, being, you know, I work in human services, I work with mentally retarded adults, and, you know, they there are times that I had to practice every principle I learned in here, you know. And I have going on a 2-year-old son, and there's times that, like, you know, his favorite word now is no. And it's like, you know, what do you mean no? I'm your mom. He doesn't care. Little Kathy, I mean, come on, you know, it's like, it's my responsibility to know that, like, this is just how he is. And, you know, if he's not endangering himself, it's okay today. You know, but responsibility is just, you know, I take responsibility for what I do and what I don't do. And I don't use the excuse I'm an addict, because I did that when I came in here, because I heard somebody saying it sounded good to me. Oh, I'm an addict, so I can act like a knucklehead. No, you're an addict, so you need to take responsibility and, like, you know, do the right thing. And I said, you know, and when I got here, I first got here, and I still do this, you know, we're talking about, you know, sweeping up things. I was in a home group that one of the responsibilities, service responsibility, was sweeping up the church parking lot for all the cigarette butts. I thought that was the coolest thing. I liked it. Because that way, like, you kept a good atmosphere recovery, and it wasn't hard. You know, it didn't take much to do it. You know, now the stuff I'm doing is hard. Like, I feel like I'm getting real, like, embarrassed getting up here and talking, but, you know, it's just something I do. You know, it's just something, you know, you do whatever you have to do, you know, because, you know, it is about the newcomer. It is about the person, the still suffering addict, who has less than one day clean. Because, you know, all of us here had one day clean at one point. And when you first came to a meeting, I know when I first came to a meeting, this is just for me, and I got that hug in the door, and I had people tell me to keep coming back. I was like, wow. Because that's like, you know, how many places do you go to knowing the people we are? And I say we because none of us are that unique. I mean, sorry, but we're not. You go to that, they say, oh, come back. I mean, you know, you go to somebody's house and all some stuff's missing. Like, you go to a meeting, oh, come back. Why? Do you want more things going? But, I mean, it sounds funny, but, you know, you go to a meeting, it's like, oh, keep coming back. Well, why? Because, you know, the miracle will happen. What miracle are you talking about? Well, if I told you, when, you know. That's the stuff I heard when I came around and still tell people. And, you know, the home group I'm in, you know, we say we love you, keep coming back, because we love you and we need you. And, you know, somebody's like, you love me, but you don't know me. And I turn around, I'm like, I know you better than you know yourself. Because, you know, it's like, you can be high behind the flashy clothes and the makeup and all that stuff. You hide behind, like, the big facade. But the truth is, you're a hurt soul. And you know. And you can only use so many drugs to cover it all. Or whatever you did. Because I did whatever I could get my damn hands on to. And, you know, when I got here, I was beaten. And I was very willing to do anything. I mean, I went everywhere. You know, I went to every place you could name. And, you know, I finally came here because I went to a meeting and I had people talking about what was going on up here. And how I didn't have to feel like crap anymore. And I'm grateful for the addicts in my life who are still telling me that. And, you know, this whole thing with my husband, I mean, he's much better now. He's here. He's going golfing tomorrow. I'm like, I don't know if you should be doing that or not, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, although I would like to over-shelter him, part of it is the fact that, You know, it's like when you almost lose something that you love so much. You know, you feel very overly, it's almost like you're overly responsible. It's almost an extreme thing, but, you know, you do the best you can. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. I mean, you know, responsibility is such a big thing. And, you know, I can't tell you what responsibility is. I mean, I know there's things I fall short in. I do the best I can. I mean, I show up. I go to meetings and I do the, you know, I do the best I can for, you know, my family, my my marriage, my home group. The only place I really fall short in is my own personal recovery, and I'm trying to improve in that. And, you know, I really don't have, I have nothing else to share because my mind just went completely blank, and I refuse to today make anything up as I go along. So thank you for letting me share.
I want to open the meeting up. Anyone? Meeting's open.
Hi, family. I'm an addict named John.
John.
And I came to this meeting. Personal responsibility was like, whew, man. You know, when I was out there using, it was your fault. You know, if you was married to the, I was married to, you'd use too. If you had crazy kids like mine, you'd use. You know, if you got all the shitty deals I got when I was a kid, all that, you know. When I first came back this time, 13 years ago, I went to the other fellowship first because, like, I had a resentment against Narcotics Anonymous because I had been here and y'all had not gotten me clean. That was what it was. I had a resentment because y'all did not get me clean. And I got a sponsor to set me down and says, look, the most personal thing you will ever do is go into recovery and learn about yourself and fix yourself. Personal responsibility to me means is what I'm going to get out of recovery is what I get out of recovery. If the steps are not going to work me, my sponsor's not going to get me clean, they're not going to pick me up. They'll pick me. I fall down, y'all will pick me up and brush my dirty ass off and say, get back on that step. But you're not going to work that step for me. See, I got sponsees that sometimes fall and I say, hey, look, here it is. Welcome home. You know what you did wrong. Let's try it again. I can't say, well, look, I can't feel sorry for you. You hurt yourself. You didn't hurt me. You're responsible for your recovery. I cannot take responsibility. You know, I just sat the other day with a sponsee and secretaried his meeting because he celebrated like 12 years clean. It was like so great. And I could not take credit for his recovery because I'm not going to take responsibility if he goes out. What I do for my recovery benefits me. What you do for your recovery benefits you. And that's where I learned personal responsibility. I am responsible to my recovery. I'm responsible to stand up here and share. If I've got something to share, I'm responsible to give it away to a newcomer. I'm responsible to offer my hand to a newcomer. If you need help, I'll give it to you. I'm responsible to give you whatever I've got. But I can't reach in and give you my clean time. You know, that's where the responsibility lies. It is my responsibility to stay away from the things that get me in trouble. If I go there, guess whose fault it is? It's mine. You know, the only thing that can get me using again is this thing sitting on top of my shoulders is one day going to tell me I hate myself so bad I'm going to punish myself and do that to myself again. I pray to God, y'all, with y'all's help, it don't ever get there. I can be on the relapse spiral real quick without ever using. You know, picking up is not a relapse. Picking up is picking up. Relapse all the way you feel before you pick up. As long as I keep myself away from all of that, I can climb back up. But I got to do it for myself. Y'all can't do it for me. That's where I get to personal responsibility out of recovery. Thank you.
Still open.
Covered addict. My name is Joshua.
Yeah, you know, wow. I do not have to thank my higher power for allowing me to be here. You know, it's my second convention. And when I seen the sign, responsibility, it kind of like hit me, right? Because I'm in this convention and I see a lot of merchandise, right? And I got a few dollars and I want to purchase some of this merchandise, right? But and we talk about responsibility, and it hit me real hard because in your sharing, I'm sitting in my seat and I'm like, wow. My car note is due. My insurance is due. You know, and it's good that we have meetings that specify certain actions that we go through so that we can get the information that we need so that we can come back online. So we can get back on the road that we need to be on. You know, the seatbelt got to come back on. Because the seatbelt came off. I'm getting ready to purchase some stuff. And, you know, and good thing I got direct deposit. My credit card is in somebody's car. You know what I'm saying? So I'm looking at what God does beyond my wildest dreams that I can't do for myself. You know, and when I take a good look at it, I say, wow, you know, program works. Because I come into a meeting, you know, and that's the responsible member I am today. You know, because I looked at the list, right? And it wasn't the money that bothered me. It was the different things that I knew that I had to be responsible for. Because if I go to some of these events, something's going to be lacking. You know, something that I know I need to be doing will be lacking. You know, and it's today, just for today, I don't want to lack the responsibility of learning how to be a grown-up, you know, especially a black grown-up man, you know. So for the newcomer, it's very important to, you know, to, like, listen and learn and learn and listen, because when I got here, the responsibilities, I didn't have any, you know, as living life on life terms, you know, because I used, and the responsibility of a using addict was to use, no matter what, you know. And just for today, you know, I know that if I make meetings, as a responsible member of Narcotics Anonymous, I will hear the things I need to hear to grow. You know, so I thank you for, like, having that, because that was for me. And, you know, and when I first saw it, I was like, wow, responsibility. You know, because I really need to be responsible for outside stuff, material stuff, just as well as personal stuff like serenity. You know, like coming to meetings and getting honest about what's going on with me. You know, and that was one of the things I was going through, you know, spending my money. Because there's a lot of good things here, you know, that I see. But is it good enough? Like, if I ain't paying my insurance and I'm partying in the banquet meeting, and then when I accidentally somebody hit me, can I go to one of the addicts that I was partying with and say, listen, I need $188 because I came to the party instead of paying my insurance. First thing they're going to tell me is that's not how I work. That's not how I work. You don't go to this place. First things first, because that's one of the slogans. And the first thing first that I realized today is that, you know, when I get home Monday or Sunday night, Monday morning, I'm going to pay my insurance. You know, and I need to share that with the newcomer, because it's very important that I can't let my thinking take me back outside of myself, you know, because that's not the program. The program talks about the growth, you know, and the growth is in me making meetings in reference to the group. Because I grow as the group grows, you know, and I thank God for recovering addicts that got more experience and responsibility and who has teaching me on a regular basis that the more I be responsible, the more I can grow as a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and I can freely have something that I can surely give away to those that are still sick and suffering. Thank you for letting me share.
My name is Tony. I'm definitely an addict. Man, I want to thank you. You know, to tell you the truth, I was sitting over there thinking that you know, I was going to come up here and I was going to say something about personal responsibility, but the real reason that I came up here was because I was scared to. And but you said something when you were sharing that that really struck me, man. You said that you grew up in a household where you were scared to go home. And I could really identify with that because I grew up in a household where I never knew what I was going to get when I went home, and I was always scared to go there. And I've grown up being scared because, you know, if we're not comfortable at home, how can we leave home? And, you know, I've lived my life, I'm 40, and for 38, 39 years, I've been very, very afraid. You know, that's just the truth. This is my first convention also. Last year I couldn't make it because I was trying to put my life back together. I was trying to be personally responsible. And, you know, about the only thing I can say about personal responsibility, in our text it says something about I'm not responsible for my disease, but I'm responsible for my recovery. And the only thing that I can say, because I ain't been around here that long, is that my recovery is real simple. You guys told me to get a sponsor, to get a book, our book, to open it up, read it, apply the shit that's in there. Don't be that same person that I was, because we know what I know what that guy's going to do. Give back and get involved. And for me, that's my program. That's my, you know, that is my personal responsibility. But thank you. You know, because until you said that, it really hadn't hit home. And again, if I took up anybody's time, that's okay too, because I was scared as hell to come up here, but I feel better.
Okay, I want to thank those who shared.